of 32, and he had 237 yards passing, and he had 3 touchdowns and 0 interceptions, which was a key for us. We're encouraged more by the fact that there were so many things with some critical errors that we made that we can be a lot better. And I know he sees that, and I look for him to improve this week. You know, he'll start for us again this week, and he's been a guy that, you know, our guys really are drawn to. And like I said earlier, I think I take my hat off to him for more than one reason, but the most of which was not being prepared, really ready to go at the beginning of the season, and understanding that he just had to keep working, and when his turn came, was he going to be ready? And I think he really has done a nice job of preparing. Hopefully he'll continue to do that, and he'll keep giving us production.
It's Thursday, and that means it's time to talk to a professional who would never forget a name.
So I wish your son Miller all the best.
My name is Noah!
Why? Because his voice is so velvety smooth.
Yo, Manella, kick it one time, boy.
It makes the girls go,
oh my.
He's a rapper so fly.
So if you want sports talk that's more than just a score, you gotta listen to Wade on KB Country 94. We got the tunes that'll make you shake and bake. Z96.3, The Lake.
He makes Eminem wanna cry. It's the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Heaney.
Sportos, motorheads, geeks, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Right now on The Sports Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie at 118 North Millen Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.
Yes, that intro means it is a Thursday. Time to talk to the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Heaney. Hello, Brian. How are you?
Doing well, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing all right. We got some high school football tonight because it was moved from tomorrow night to tonight because of some possible severe weather. So we have our version of NFL Thursday night. It's high school football Thursday night. We're excited about that. And we're also excited about college football coming up this weekend. And let's go back and talk about the Oklahoma State game, because it seemed to be a surprise to some. I don't know when you guys found out about it, that Carter Stanley was going to be the starting quarterback, and then he went out there and played a pretty solid game.
Yeah, he was really solid, I thought. And in terms of when did we find out about it, as soon as he broke huddle and ran out there. We had an inkling that he was going to play more and was going to play early and likely often, but did not know he would start. And I think as the week went on, you know, there was a growing belief with those close to the program that based on Oklahoma State's pass rush, especially Jordan Brailford, who, as you saw, even with Carter back there and his escapability, still had 3 sacks and 5 TFLs, they just knew you had to have somebody a little more fleet of foot, somebody a little tougher to bring down when the pocket's collapsing, and so they made the move. And on top of that, there's a certain spark that Carter seems to, more times than not, provide. Now, you might ask, well, how come he hasn't taken the job and run with it? In the past, you know, he's had some big moments, but then he's gotten shaken up, you know, with an injury or some other setback that, you know, has kept him from being as productive, sustained over a long time. And, you know, in this case, you know, hopefully we'll see him really take the job and make it his own over the next few weeks, going back to the place where he got his first real extended playing time 2 years ago, a second half performance in Morgantown that set the stage for him to eventually knock off Texas. And so I think that you know, there's a lot of good going on right now in terms of the belief in that locker room around him. He's a player you and I have talked about before that has the respect of the entire locker room because of the fire with which he plays. I think I referenced last week to you that they could be down 3 or 4 touchdowns with 5 minutes left, and he's still lowering his shoulder and diving for that extra yard, even though it may not affect the outcome of the game. Every play matters so much to him. And he's the type of guy, not that other quarterbacks don't do this, but you know what, let's say you get the ball to, you know, a running back or a receiver on a screen and he needs to block downfield. He's the guy that's, you know, laying that lead block where it hurts, you know, on the opposition. And you just love that because he's willing to sacrifice anything for the greater good of the team. And so I think that, like I told you last week, you know, there would be a real rallying around him. Not that they don't support Peyton and Miles. They absolutely do. But I think for a while, going back to that Texas game, which is absolutely the high water mark in this program's, you know, history with David Beatty, that he was the guy. And I think a lot of guys, you know, respond to his leadership and what he's given this team in good times and in bad. So I'm real hopeful this can turn into something for him in the next few weeks, because it's going to be a tough month of October when you talk about not being at home again for 4 weeks here with a bye week in between, but two really tough road trips to Morgantown and Lubbock. And you'd like to have some positive momentum coming out of all of those, whether it leads to a win or not, because I think on the other side of that, you still got home dates with Iowa State and TCU that I think are winnable. You still got, you know, a trip to K-State that looks more in your wheelhouse than it has in some recent years. And so you want to survive this stretch with there still being a lot to fight and play for, and I think he's the type of guy that keeps everybody dialed in, fired up, and chomping at the bit for that next gen.
He certainly was a positive the other day in that loss to Oklahoma State, 48-28. Another positive, and he's been a positive all year long when he's been on the field, and that's Puka Williams. And, you know, when he's on the field, defenses know, and they try to obviously stop your best weapon. And some teams have been pretty good at doing that, but he always seems to break a long run or have at least one big play every game, which I think is an attribution to his talent, but also the lines obviously open up a hole for him. But he can make guys miss that other running backs can't do. Just talk about how the defense is focused on him, and yet he's been able to come up with a big play almost every game.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. He's one of those guys that, you know, you feel like every time he touches it, he can score. And like the Baylor game, for example, if in his first nine touches he was getting bottled up, well, you keep trying because eventually you're going to bust one. And he had nine carries for 16 yards, and then he finally got that seam. And on carry number 10, there's 72 yards down the right sideline. It's kind of like the premise they tell you in radio sales, or in any sales for that matter. It takes 12 asks to get a yes. And you might be getting nothing but no's those first 11, but you keep on asking because eventually you're going to get that yes. He's one of those guys that if they keep getting it to him in different ways, whether it's out of the backfield where we saw that at an all-time high versus Oklahoma State, six catches, that's really more in line with what I thought we'd see once they told us he had the best hands on the team, or whether it's, you know, running in the wildcat or a reverse or some other ways to be creative and unique to get those eight-man box stacked fronts out of the equation and force the defense to try and tackle him one-on-one in space. He's the type of guy you want to keep plugging away until he busts the big one, because when he does, it can change the game. And we've now seen him in each of his first four starts have at least a 40-yard run in each of those 4 weeks, which, going back to 1996, which is as far back as the FBS tracks this stat, I don't know why 96, but maybe, you know, that was like the Wade Gershner High School graduation year, and they thought, let's get our act together.
Yeah.
But that's as far back as these stats go. He's the only player in the history of the FBS to start his career, his first four games, having a 40-plus yard run in each of those games. There's only one other guy in college football doing it this year that's done it for four straight games, a kid at Memphis. And he's the only guy in the history of Kansas football to ever do that of any class in four straight games, and certainly the first guy to do it in the first four games of his career. His rushing totals in his first four games surpassed that of Gale Sayers in his first four by about 70 yards. And so he's doing things we've never seen done before. And I'm always hesitant to start comparing him to Sayers because you're talking about probably one of the top five or six running backs in the history of the NFL. Don't come at me with stats. He only played 6 years in the league, so you can't look at it in terms of totals. Yeah. But in terms of the quality and not the quantity, Sayers, many will tell you, is one of the all-time five or six greats. I hate putting him in that category, but the simple fact of the matter is he's doing things that warrant his inclusion in that conversation as it relates to Kansas. And he's doing things that leapfrog a lot of guys between Sayers and him in these first 4 weeks. So you just hope they can find ways to keep him healthy, keep finding ways to get him balls, you know, out of the backfield that put him in position to do what he does best, which is blow by you or wiggle around you. And they'll have to keep tricking it up because teams are going to keep scheming to take him away. But so far, so good with Doug Meacham and company and finding ways to get him, if not in the end zone every week, busting big plays that set up scores every single week.
Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, with us every Thursday here on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by, see Matt and Jamie, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. So we talk about a couple of the positives for the KU Jayhawk football team, but let's talk about some concerns. And when I was watching this game on television, one thing that really stood out was it was a rough day for the secondary. I remember one situation where Cornelius missed a wide open receiver down the field, and the very next play, it looked to be a very similar route, and they burned him again. He was wide open. Talk about the secondary, because the secondary certainly struggled last year. It's improved this year, but it was a rough go on Saturday.
Yeah, it really was. And that's one thing that, you know, we hoped would be a major difference in taking on Oklahoma State. I think going back a decade to Justin Blackman, to Bowman, to Washington, they've had all these Biletnikoff winners or finalists, and there have been some games where it just felt like we were in the schoolyard, and they're just chucking it around, playing the everybody go deep on a Hail Mary type thing, and they're just playing a game of catch with us. You know what games I'm talking about. And really felt like this would be a year where they wouldn't be able to do that. But for the second straight week here without Ricky Thomas, who isn't a household name yet, but he was one of the reasons why we felt like the secondary was vastly improved this year, a guy that immediately was starting day one for Kansas and has now been out for both of your league games. And then Mike Lee gets nicked up, and he's on the sidelines for much of that one, and when he's not on the sidelines, he's playing a little bit hurt. Suddenly your top two safeties are out of the mix, which makes you so vulnerable on the back end with no veteran help back there if these younger corners get toasted. And, you know, you've got Corian Harris, who's the highest-rated signee in school history, but, again, he's playing in his fifth game collegiately, and he's going up against some guys that are veterans and guys that, you know, in the case of the Johnson kid, were ranked even higher than him coming out of high school as a receiver. He was the number two receiver in all of the country coming out of high school. And so it wasn't surprising to see Oklahoma State have success. The number of times KU got burnt, though, obviously was alarming. There were four plays in terms of chunk yards vertically where the fewest of the four was 39 yards and several were 60, 70 yards. So that's scary. And obviously, it's a situation where Ricky Thomas has already been ruled out this week, so you're going to have to continue to live without him. Mike Lee should be back and hopefully 100% or close to it, but until you get past the bye week, you're not going to be completely whole there. But I think both in terms of getting guys back that have been hurt, but also growing up guys that are starting for the first time in their careers, yeah, this should be a much better secondary later in the year. And as guys in the blitz packages like Azur Kamara, who we keep talking about, and Najee Stevens-McKenzie, some of these guys, as they continue to do a better job of getting pressure on the quarterback, then those guys won't have to cover for as long back there. But when they got toasted, like you alluded to, it was a double move. It's a simple double move where you cut to the right, cut to the left, and off you go. That they got beat on, and they were just backpedaling the whole time, and the safety help didn't come in time, and next thing you know, they're in the end zone for six again. And so that was alarming because the big story all week was Oklahoma State being without one of their top receivers, and then their third leading receiver was a late scratch before the game. And so we kind of thought, man, maybe this will be okay for Kansas, and it was anything but. But I have all the faith in the world in Clint Bowen and this defense, and with whatever he has to work with, he's going to make them competitive. The hard part is, though, let's call it like it is, this is a completely different challenge this week.
Yeah.
It is on a completely higher level than, you know, what we saw in Waco or what we saw last week from Oklahoma State. You've got the guy who's number three in the Heisman race right now, according to ESPN.com, and whether it's Sills or whether it's Sims or Jennings, I mean, he's just got all league caliber receivers all over the field to throw the ball to. And so it's a tough week to go up there, still not completely healthy. But you know, we'll find out real fast if Kansas can compete in this game based on how they line up opposite of Will Grier, because this kid is special.
Yeah, it's not a good sign of secondary struggle against Oklahoma State, and then you got to go to Morgantown, and West Virginia probably better offensively and certainly has a Heisman Trophy candidate, as you mentioned, at quarterback. You can hear the coverage Pre-game show at 10:30 and then kickoff at 11 on Z96.3. The Lake is Brian David, and everybody will have the call. Is West Virginia hosting Kansas. Late night in the fog. What stood out to you about that with the basketball team? Of course, all the pomp and circumstance and all the entertainment. I know that's fun and everything, but when it comes down to it, on the floor, was there anything that stood out to you?
Well, we got five fewer minutes on the floor because the Rap Act went as long as it did. And that's, everybody's asked me the last few days, what stood out? It's having Bill Self on the TV broadcast say, yeah, he went about four songs too long, so we're only going to play 15 minutes instead of 20, which cracked me up. Because 2 Chainz was great, and I think they got exactly what they wanted out of him in terms of the atmosphere and the setting and making a good impression on the recruits that were there. I mean, it was electric. He was awesome. He's a former college basketball player from Alabama State back in the mid-90s, and I guess there's a rule where he was not allowed to play in the scrimmage, but he asked Coach Self if he could, and they had a jersey for him and everything. But he took some shots from 19 feet, 3 in a row. He drained all 3. I'm thinking, man, we should have him and Udoka shoot free throws. Yeah. It was incredible. Once we actually got to the scrimmage and we actually saw Udoka shoot a free throw, which I kind of wondered if it was scripted, like, make sure you foul him, so we can have him shoot one in front of 16,300. Coach Self was so proud of the form and how much smooth and more fluid it is now, and he missed it, but, man, it looked good. He didn't have a chicken wing sticking out wide to the left and pushing it off to the other hand and all that. I mean, it was smooth and fluid, and you can see that he's put in a ton of work. And I asked Coach, I said, okay, well, 41% last year, what's a realistic number to shoot for? And I thought he'd say 55. And he said, I think he can shoot in the 60s, And man, if he shot 60 or 65, think about how many more points that would be. Think about some of the games that would change. I mean, obviously, you'd win the Oklahoma game in Norman a year ago, right. Hands down. But, I mean, if he has that type of market improvement, which essentially we're talking about 20%, a 50% increase in terms of where he was at last year and where he could be this year, that would be amazing. And by 50%, I mean he only shot 41, and he'd be going up 20% off of 41.
Right.
There's financial guys right now questioning my math. Yeah. The point is, it would be a dramatic improvement, and I thought that was significant, and it was a missed shot. I just gave you 2 minutes on a missed shot from a 15-minute scrimmage. But that, to me, was one of the highlights, hearing Coach Self gush about how hard he worked on it. Now, obviously, the thing everybody else shows up to see is the freshmen and the transfers, and clearly, Grimes, he looks the part of the number 8 player in the country. He absolutely does. 6'5", so athletic, smooth. Devon Dotson, a point guard, he's a top 30 guy and a McDonald's All-American. Coach Self says he has the same explosiveness of a Frank Mason type. He looked the part. And then David McCormick, my goodness, 6'10", 265. He's lost 50 pounds since the start of his senior season in high school. So, I mean, he's getting chiseled now, and it's just a huge, huge human being. He looked great. And then we've known about Dedrick Lawson and K.J. Lawson, and if anything, K.J. outshined Dedrick. Dedrick's the guy I keep telling you could be the best player on the team and Big 12 Player of the Year and all that. He kind of eased his way into it a little bit. He didn't do anything to jump off the page, but K.J. was hitting everything he looked at, which was kind of surprising with all the hype going to his brother normally. But then you have Charlie Moore, too. I thought he looked good. So I think for fans, you show up to this event, A, for the free trip inside Allen Fieldhouse because you don't normally get that, but B, to see the newcomers and who's improved from last year and all that. I think everybody went home happy in that regard. But to me, the biggest stories were, yes, the freshmen all look like the diaper dandy McDonald's All-Americans that they are, and B, Udoka clearly has put in a ton of work with his form and mechanics, and let's hope that leads to a lot of benefits for Kansas in the upcoming year.
All right, time for an off-the-wall question, Brian, and I don't know if you've read this story. It came out, I think, yesterday. Yes, it did. It was on ESPN.com by Jake Trotter. Did you see this about how Mike Leach purposely dropped the game plan in an Oklahoma-Texas game before the game in 1999?
Yeah, I didn't read the article, but I saw the headline, and I saw Mark Mangino tweeting about it, which called my attention to it because he was an assistant with OU back then. And That does sound very leech-like that he would do that.
Well, and it's funny when you read the story is that eventually it got to the defensive coordinator of Texas, and they used it, and then they got down by 17 points because it was the opposite. They're not necessarily cheating. I guess you could say they're cheating, and they weren't cheating. They picked it up, but it was all ruse. But it was laminated and everything. Mike Leach went all out. Him and Cale Gundy kind of came up with the idea. And I found it fascinating that Bob Stoops didn't know anything about it. And Mac Brown didn't know anything about it. And even now today, Mike Leach is talking about he's fascinated by hearing the stories from the Texas staff, which included current Texas head coach Tom Herman, and how they went about defending Oklahoma with Josh Heupel that year based off of bad information that they found on the field that was purposely dropped there by Mike Leach, which leads me to the off-the-wall question, and that is, what is the best made-up or believable story that you have ever tried to use on somebody or someone has used on you?
Wow. That's a great question. Best made-up story. Golly. You're going to have to, like, fill for me for a second so we don't have awkward radio silence.
Something that just got you. Something that got you just hook, line, and sink. You're like, man, are you kidding me? But you probably deep down knew it wasn't true,
yeah.
But yet you started doing the math. You're like, well, that could be. Or you're like, my God, well, I want to believe it, you know?
Here's the story I'll give you, and it's not quite what you're asking, but close. I used to do radio with Scott Pollard back in the day, and we decided as a staff on April the 1st of 2011 that we would create a prank on the air that Scott and I got into an argument over something controversial he said, because he was always kind of pushing the envelope and I was always the straight-laced one because didn't want to get us kicked off the air by the FCC.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided we would create a ruse that we would get in this big on-air fight. He would throw a chair because we were doing the show live from Hoagland Ballpark where KU plays baseball, and then he would peel out in his Harley Davidson motorcycle and make this big scene. And we did this because it was April the 1st,
right?
April Fool's. And so we had a caller call in that we planted, and he said something, and Scott went on this kind of negative tangent, and I immediately disagreed, and then Scott acted like, why the heck do you ever challenge me on anything? I'm the authority. And then I kind of said something that implied you shouldn't be so arrogant, blah, blah, blah. Next thing you know, he slams the headset down, throws a chair across the booth, which was very real. I was worried about the drywall inside the radio booth, and then just storms out of there. And then you can hear him screeching of tires peeling out in the parking lot. And then all of a sudden, the flood of phone calls coming in. And it was so funny because some people were taking Scott's stance and saying, yeah, B. Haney was, like, really harsh with him today. Normally Brian's nicer. He was, like, kind of a jerk. And then they were like, no, Pollard's so immature. How dare he react like that? Haney had every right to call him out. You got to be more professional. And so this went on for about an hour.
Uh-huh.
And it was the first, like, real awkward controversy we'd ever had on the show. And then after an hour, we come back from commercial break. Scott's back on the headset, and he's like, April Fool's, everybody. So we were in on that together. We gave the rest of the world some bad news, or some bad information, I should say, and they mostly took the bait. That's probably the best story I could come up with.
Well, that's a good one. I like that. I'll share mine real quickly, because I know you usually like to hear my answer to some of these questions. And
yeah.
And that was when I was at Pittsburgh State. I was going to graduate in May at Pittsburgh State on time and everything in 90, I think it was 98 or whatever it was. I'm old, I can't remember. So we had my weight bench and weights and everything upstairs in this four-bedroom house, and I had three roommates in college. And so I was doing bench press, and I got to where I was kind of out of breath. And then I called my mom. It was April Fool's Day, same thing as you're talking about. And my mom had sent out a whole bunch of invitations in regards to, hey, you know, Wade's graduating Pittsburgh State and all this good stuff, spent money on that. And I called her up. I don't know what got me to think about doing this to my mom, because it's really cruel now that I think about it. Since I've grown up since then, it really is cruel what I did. But I called her and I said, Mom, I've got some bad news. And I'm kind of like hyperventilating because I've been lifting weights. And she goes, oh, no. And my mom's such a sweet, sweet person, and she's very gullible. And she says, what's wrong? And I said, well, Mom, I said, I was all those invitations you sent out, I don't know what you're going to have to do, but I'm not, I just notified I'm not going to graduate on time because there was a problem with with the 3 credits transferring from Bethany College to Pitt State, which means I'm 3 hours short. So now I can't walk and get my diploma and all that other stuff. And I got to wait till the fall, and I got to take a summer course and stay here this summer instead of starting life in the real world. And my mom, there's this long pause. And you could hear her wheels turning like, oh, no. And she's so sweet. She says, well, that's okay, son. You know, we'll adjust and this and that and so forth and so on. And then I said, Mom, what is today? And she's like, well, it's Monday. Why? I'm like, no, what's today's date? There's this long pause. And then my mom, who never cusses, was so close to cursing at me once she realized what I had done to her. And now, ever since then, every year on April Fool's Day, even if I try to do something on her, she's ready for it. She will not fall for it ever again. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I love that. It's a great story. Sounds like a sweet lady.
She's a sweet lady and had to put up with me back then, that's for sure. Hey, man, I always appreciate you answering those questions. They're always good stories. And we hope that you have a safe trip down to Morgantown. And, hey, you're going to go all the way down there. Might as well shock the world, right?
Might as well. Get that win over number 8. I like it. Let's do it.
All right, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.
Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, every Thursday here on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency, the farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.